film reviews and movie news with Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Yes, it is. It's film reviews and movie news with me, Stuart Pink, and rumour has it he once grew a moustache just so he could volunteer as a hospital chaplain. It's Mark Searby.
We've discussed moustaches in movies before, and I've said to you I love the moustaches where they sort of twirl up at the end and people sort of twizzle them and whatever. I'm a big fan of those. I could never grow one.
Yes.
I just can't do it. But
I could picture you with a good, like, Captain Hook,
like a handlebar moustache,
curly moustache.
Yeah. I'd be all right with that. It would take a lot of work though, wouldn't it? Yeah,
it's dedication to the art.
It is absolutely.
You need more than November.
Absolutely. I'm much more of a, well, as you know, I've got a goatee, so that's enough to keep in line anyway. But I'm
it's
guessing,
like a moustache, but it slipped.
Yes, yeah. I'm guessing, you know, you talking about moustaches is because you're referencing a certain very famous movie star.
Yes, the most famous moustache in all of Hollywood history, I would go so far as to say.
Tom Selleck. No, not Tom Selleck.
Oh, yeah,
no.
Right.
No, you're talking about Charlie Chaplin, aren't you?
Indeed.
Yes. Our first film this week, which is in cinemas, which I find kind of interesting. It's a documentary about Charlie Chaplin. And the thing is, there have been... Now, I'm a fan of Charlie Chaplin. I have to say, I've seen the majority of his work. I own a lot of it on DVD and Blu-ray, etc. And, you know, let's be honest here. You know, the man was a pioneer of comedy and of film, and still is to this day. You know, he's been ripped off millions of times, isn't it? Let's be honest here, you know.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I feel like they've tried to cast him and recreate him.
Exactly, that's the thing, you know.
Biography.
So, you know, Chaplin's legacy continues to this day, nearly 100 years, over 100 years since he was born. There have been many documentaries about Charlie Chaplin. I've seen a few of them. I think most of the ones that I've seen have struggled to get under the skin of him professionally and personally, you know, both together, basically. Most of them have just been his professional work. I think this documentary, which is called The Real Charlie Chaplin, by the way, it just about manages it. There's plenty of stories that we know, but there's quite a few that I didn't know, I have to say. I was quite interested in that. Like early on, so try and keep up with this bit, Stuart. There is a revelation that Charlie Chaplin sued a guy called Charlie Applin, A-P-L-I-N, who had been ripping off the kid movies. When it came to court, Applin explained he wasn't ripping off Chaplin, but was instead copying Billy West, who in turn was ripping off Chaplin. Right?
Right. Blimey.
Yeah. Okay. Right. I mean, I didn't know that. I had no idea about that. I thought that was kind of interesting, you know, and that's...
So that was the first tribute act, was it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been tribute acts.
Like fake that.
Yes. Yes.
It started back then.
Yeah. So, you know... It does talk about his private life as well, which it turns out it was private to a certain degree, but he was always on as well. He was always the entertainer. He didn't want anybody to know the real Charlie Chaplin. And that happens with quite a few comedians, actually. We still see it to this day a little bit, that when they're out and about, they're on. But when they're at home, then they're not that person. But this happened because Chaplin had things in his personal life that could have destroyed him and his career. There's plenty of talk about and also from Chaplin's ex-wives. Some of the things they talk about, I found quite shocking. I really, like, Lita Chaplin was called so many hateful names by the press and by a lot of famous people because after she got divorced, she was speaking out against Charlie Chaplin and everything that he had put her through. So those points in the documentary, I was really shocked by, but I was also really pleased that they were included because they needed to be told, because I think it's something that a lot of us didn't know at all.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, right.
There's also some really rare recordings in the film that are set to reenactment. I wasn't a huge fan of the reenactments because it felt like it was taking away from what Chaplin was saying. And the thing is, because the recordings are quite... the quality is not the best, as you can imagine.
Yeah, quite a while ago.
Yeah, it sort of took it away. So I felt like the reenactments were a little bit misguided, you know, like we were missing important dialogue and instead we were focusing on action or whatever else was on there. There's also a really strange section where they compare the upbringing of Chaplin to Hitler. I mean, listen, I get what they're trying to do when comparing both careers. And obviously, you know, what they're trying to do is show the line from Chaplin through to the fact that his first talkie was The Dictator, which obviously was a spoof of Hitler and the Third Reich. But it felt like they were spending far too long on the comparisons, even like here they are at school, look how similar they look, and you think we get it, but it felt like it was unnecessarily long. Like it was a bit like, ooh, okay, are we saying
the same moustache even back then?
Well, that's the thing, but it felt like they were saying, okay, at some point you're going to turn around and you're going to go, actually they were related, you know. It felt like they were pushing that sort of thing, so I was a bit disappointed that went on a little bit too long. However, I did enjoy the segment on Charlie Chaplin appearing in front of the Un-American Committee about whether he was a communist. This is something I didn't know about. I found it really interesting. I learned a lot as well. And there's a bit in it where they uncover who is behind trying to get dirt on Chaplin to bring him down as a communist sympathizer. And I was like, wow, okay, this is quite shocking. This is, you know, it's one of those revelations where you go, wow, really? Yeah. You know, here's a man who was a world-renowned entertainer, and yet some people didn't like him. I'm trying to bring him down. So I found that section really good as well. You know, I think it is a worthwhile documentary on Chaplin. I think if you've never seen a documentary on Chaplin, this is the one to start, because it does deal with his films. It does talk about him doing the stunts as well. By the way, he did his own stunts. We should say that, you know, there's not many people who do their own stunts. What, Charlie Chaplin?
Back then, they were dangerous.
See, that's the thing. They were really dangerous. You know, Charlie Chaplin and Tom Cruise, they're about the only people who do their own stunts that are incredibly dangerous. But Chaplin didn't use wires. So, you know, look, I think this is it's an interesting documentary. If you're a fan of Chaplin, you're going to really like it. If you're not a fan of Chaplin or you don't really know his work, I think you're going to learn a lot from this, a heck of a lot from it.
Well, I was going to say, so you can watch this then if you don't know a huge amount about Charlie Chaplin already, or you haven't seen all the stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, obviously, they show you the greatest hits. I think that's the easiest way to describe it, is go, well, you know, this is what he did. And you'll go, oh, I've seen that on a clip show, or I've seen it on a meme, or, you know, whatever it is. So Chaplin's legacy still lives on to this day in such a huge way. So I think if you haven't seen it all, it won't matter. You'll find a lot more interested in this.
As someone who likes, is a big fan of all his work, didn't.
We'll still really enjoy it. We'll still really enjoy it. And as I said, I think the fact that they kept in a lot of the negative side of Chaplin, the private side of Chaplin, only emphasises how even-handed the documentary really is.
Brilliant. So it's in cinemas, the real Charlie Chaplin.
It is. It is. It's in cinemas.
It's not a silent movie, obviously.
No, it's not. No.
It's not all done for the medium of.
No.
So you could watch this and then watch straight afterwards, Stealing Chaplin, as to what happens after.
Well, yes, that's true. Yes, that's very true. Yeah, Stealing Chaplin, the film that we reviewed last year, it was, about some buffoons trying to steal Charlie Chaplin's body for a ransom. So, yes, you could watch that as well. Yes, it would make a nice bookend.
A wonderful, a sequel-ish.
Sort of.
Excellent. What else you got for us, Mark?
So on Disney Plus now is The French Dispatch, which is the new film from writer-director Wes Anderson. And it's a love letter to journalists set in an outpost of an American newspaper in a fictional 20th century French city. And it brings to life a collection of stories published in The French Dispatch magazine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So as I said, new film from writer-director Wes Anderson, who I think it's fair to say is maybe a bit of a Marmite creator. You know, his previous work like Rushmore or The Life Aquatic featuring Steve Zissou and the Royal Tenenbaums, or Fantastic Mr. Fox, Isle of Dogs, you know, plenty of people have either fallen in love or absolutely hated those movies. So I think, you know, there's not much middle ground with Wes Anderson. I am, on the whole, a lover of his work. There are certain films I don't particularly like of his, but on the whole, I think he's very good. You know, he's certainly unique. Let's put it that way. He's a unique director. His style is very eye-popping, and it does have a very rich color palette running through every single film. And The French Dispatch is no different. However, this seems slightly more muted on the color front. And I think maybe that's to do with it being set in a small city, which is a very quirky city as well. The problem I have with this film is that because it is many stories from a magazine brought to life, it feels like there's no central narrative, except for the few times we see Bill Murray's editor try and edit these articles down, but then finds he doesn't want to trim anything from the writing anyway and just prints a ridiculous amount of words, basically. So we're kind of left with either a series of vignettes or a portmanteau film, and I wasn't really sure which way the film fell, but then maybe that's Anderson throwing up another unique angle of his filmmaking. I don't know.
Like he doesn't want it to fall into a category series.
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, the stories themselves, I found them all rather flat. I've got to be honest. Strange set of characters that I never really enjoyed watching. You know, there are other Wes Anderson films where I like the characters. In this film, I hated them. I just didn't connect with any of them. There is something stopping it. And I think it's because the story itself, or the stories, the individual stories, and then the overarching story, I found rather uninteresting. And they all felt a little bit whimsical. You know, they're kind of enjoyable for about 2 minutes, and then the rest felt like it was dragging it out. I mean, take for example, so one of the stories in here follows Herb St. Cesarac, who is played by Owen Wilson, who's a writer who rides around town on his push bike, describing what he sees, and then transfers that to his column. Now, many times he breaks the fourth wall, so he talks to the camera. Other times there are meant to be jokes or slapstick moments that I didn't feel landed very well at all. And during all of this, we're meant to be enjoying his voiceover about how he sees the city. I just didn't think it worked. I didn't think it suited the rest of the film either. And I think that's part of it, is that all of them felt very individual but didn't join up that well.
Almost could have been a series or...
Yeah. So if you'd have expanded each of them into an hour and made, you know, 10 of them or something like that, that's, at least I would have understood that more. But this, I'm not sure whether, you know, I'm always going to be interested in Wes Anderson's movies. There's no two ways about it. As I said, very unique creator, without a doubt. But this one, I didn't enjoy. In fact, I kind of think it's up its own ego of a bit too much, to be honest with you. And I think maybe that was the problem. It just did not do it for me at all, this one.
It sounds like he's kind of put himself in the central character a bit and struggled to edit out things or put it all together as one.
Yeah, I mean, Anderson always puts himself in at least one of the characters, not playing it, but, you know, it's him in that character in at least one of his films, even Isle of Dogs and Fantastic Mr. Fox. But I think you're right, is that the editor, played by Bill Murray, is very much Wes Anderson, just in a different form. You know, Bill Murray is the newspaper editor, whereas Anderson is the film editor and film director and writer and whatever else. And there is a very clear line between both of them. Both of them, to me, felt very messy.
This has got, I mean, the cast is incredible, yeah? They've got so many people in this.
Yeah.
It must have pulled the right strings in the script reading stage.
Well, it's amazing. You look at that cast, which is incredible, and it was made for, I think it was made for $25 million, which, how they pulled that cast together, made it look like it did, shot it on location as well, is a real tribute to Wes Anderson. You know, he uses every single dollar he is given. No two ways about it. It's just this one I did not connect with at all.
Would you say, I was looking at the trailer for this, I felt a bit confused, just in a 2.5 minute trailer.
Yes.
But it seems like the kind of film that might be worth watching if you're thinking of going into film, or you're just interested in it because it's a bit different, like nothing else like this.
Yeah, well, this is what I'm saying. He's a unique director. Yeah. You're right. There is nothing else like this apart from the other Wes Anderson movies like Rushmore or The Life Aquatic. You know, they're all very unique movies. And if we're looking for unique voices in cinema, Wes Anderson is certainly one of them. And I will always say, you know, he's a director who I'll go and see, but sometimes it doesn't work for me. A lot of the time it does work for me. I love Isle of Dogs. I think that's one of his best films he's ever made. I know it's a stop motion thing, but it's still a very Wes Anderson movie. Rushmore, I love. I really do. Not so much The French Dispatch, though.
Yeah. So is this cinema?
So this is on Disney Plus.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Disney. I know.
Continues to amuse me. That
that these sort of quirky adult movies are turning up on Disney Plus. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in amongst Frozen.
Yes.
Yeah. Round the Last Dragon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. So it's out now. You dispatched it.
I dispatched this one away, unfortunately.
Excellent. Mark, for our FM listeners, what you got for us next week?
So next week, we're going to be talking about the new big screen adaptation of Cyrano de Bergerac. This one stars Peter Dinklage, him of Game of Thrones. I know. Yes. And then on DVD and Blu-ray, we're going to be talking about King Richard, which is the Will Smith movie about the Williams sisters, the tennis stars, and about how the father helped them become the greatest tennis professionals the world has ever seen. And it is, we're talking about two movies here that have got a lot of awards buzz.
Yeah, excellent. When you said King Richard, I was just thinking, isn't he the guy under the car park?
it's not King that. Richard. It's not that, no.
Okay. That's a movie I'd like to see there. Marvellous. Mark, we shall see you there, or we'll see you on the podcast in a few moments' time for an extra movie.
Splendid.
With Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
It's still Film Reviews and Movie News. Mark Searby still with me on the podcast. What else have we got, Mark?
Well, we're going to travel back now in time to the 80s to talk about a movie that, well, I'm going to give you the history in a moment, but it's finally found its way to Blu-ray here in the UK. So this is a film called The McPherson Tapes. It is set on an autumn evening in 1983, where a young man was videotaping his niece's fifth birthday party. As the night's strange occurrences took place, he kept his video camera running, recording the entire event.
Oh, wow. Mm. Okay. Well, back in the days when you could rely on the battery of a video camera.
I think what we should say is it is an old-fashioned video camera, you know, the chunky ones that you had to put on the shoulder and whatever else. So this is a film that I think not a lot of people will know about at all. I certainly didn't. And the background to this film is completely wild. So let me tell you the background before I tell you about the film. Okay.
Yeah.
So it classes itself as the first ever found footage movie. And for anybody who says, well, that's Cannibal Holocaust, it's not Cannibal Holocaust, not a found footage movie. It was made in 1989. It was bought by a small distributor who, just before was going to release it on video, had a massive fire at their warehouse and it destroyed the master copies.
Oh, no.
However, it turned out that a few of the videos that they'd got sat there ready to go out had actually shipped early to some video shops. So these, because obviously they couldn't put them on rental because actually the film didn't exist because it had been burnt, the masters, these videos were copied, the titles were removed, and then the video for years was being displayed at genuine UFO conventions as proof that aliens do exist, and this was the first video to show it.
Oh, wow.
Wait, there's okay. more. There's more. Okay, right. I told you, it's wild. The director of the film had no idea this was happening until he was invited years later to talk at one of these conventions. And even though he explained, it's a film, I made this film myself, it's a movie, it's not real, the majority of the audience didn't believe him and still believed it was proof of alien life.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
So the film, it's incredible, isn't it? So the film changed its name from the McPherson Tapes to what's called UFO abduction, which obviously you had said to me off air. Did I get the right one? Because it says UFO abduction. Yes, you did. That's what it says on IMDb, because that's how it started. So it's called, it was called UFO abduction. It took on its own life without the director. Now, if that wasn't wild enough, okay, ready for this. Dick Clark Productions, yes, the Dick Clark in the US, you know, wanted to make a new film version of it. So they put $1.5 million up front, made the film, tested it. It tested as the worst film they'd ever made. So it was taken away from the director again. It was re-edited to look as if it was another found footage UFO film with additional testimony from authoritative figures. And then it was put out. And to this day, some of that footage appears on these documentaries that you see on, you know, whatever it is, the Paranormal Channel or something else like that. I told you it was a wild story.
That's mad, isn't it?
It's, I mean, it's just
taking a life of its own, is the film.
It really is. So you're going to say to me, how's the film?
Yeah, how is the film?
It's rubbish. It's absolutely rubbish. It's 62 minutes of blurry 1980s VHS tape footage where you can hardly see anything happening in the house. The aliens appear for less than 30 seconds in total. The acting is really poor. The whole thing is very poor, to be honest with you. It's, you know, it may well be the first found footage movie, but... The genre has come on leaps and bounds since this. It really has. I mean, there's nothing to it apart from this guy walking around with this camera, ultimately filming this birthday party. That's all it is, really. So I built that film up very nicely there, didn't I? With amazing background information.
So much potential, yeah.
I will say this. When I read that, before I'd seen the film, I was so curious. I was like, my goodness, what is this film? You know, what's the footage? It's such a letdown. Yeah. Even by 1980s standards, it's such a letdown. It's one of those movies where the myth is better than the actual thing.
Yeah, just hear your introduction to it and assume it's brilliant and then just don't watch it.
well you can see it on any of these UFO programs that splice the footage from it. It's all there and you don't have to sit through somebody's fifth birthday party.
I mean, looking at some of the stills on this, I mean, it looks like a great slice of nostalgia going back to the 80s. So the aliens are in it for 30 seconds,
something like that. I mean, they initially see them. They're out in the woods. They initially see them and you see it briefly and then they run off and then they go back into the house. And then all manner of weird things happens where it's like they're locking the doors or something. And then they go, why don't we just go back to the birthday party? And you think, you've just seen aliens. Come on. And then the aliens arrive a bit later on.
So eat some cake and take a doggy bag.
I don't want to say too much more. I know the film obviously came out, you know, 1989, so, you know, a few decades ago. I just don't want to spoil the ending because the ending is one of the only worthwhile bits. But even then, I'm kind of like, oh, right, okay, you know.
So it's 1 hour and 6 minutes here. So back in the 80s, was that a long time? That's a long time for a fifth birthday.
No, I mean, you've got to think, you know, The Godfather was made in the 70s, Ben-Hur in the 60s, you know, all of these. So 60-something minutes.
About 3 days long.
So. Yeah, you know, 60-something minutes is nothing. I mean, to be honest with you, it was a blessing that it was just 60 minutes. You know, I was sat there thinking it's going to be over soon, thankfully.
Oh, well, it's interesting history to it.
That's the thing, you know. Interesting history. I thought it was interesting to tell you that. Of course, really the review is, what have they put on screen? And as I said, what they've put on screen is, well, I don't want to say, no.
See why they made E.T. in the end.
Yes.
Reinvigorate the franchise.
Yeah.
Marvellous, Mark. Thank you very much. What you got for us next week to sort of remind you?
So we're going to be talking about the new big screen adaptation of Cyrano de Bergerac. Bizarrely, it's called Cyrano, this version. That's the way they pronounce his name. Ah. Yeah. Then we're going to talk about King Richard, which is a new Will Smith film. And then, as a special podcast extra, we're going to go back. We're going to talk about House of Gucci again.
Oh, yes. Your favourite.
It's a House of Gucci. I'm here. It's Pablo. And listen, I'm not going to do any more because otherwise we could be here all day.
Almost as good as Lady Gaga. it's like having her on the chat with us.
Trust me, I've got some real stories about those accents, some real stories. But until then, Stuart, arrivederci.
Film reviews and movie news. With Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Thanks for listening to Film Reviews and Movie News. We've been doing this podcast for years now. We've watched hundreds of films and some of them were actually quite good. For even more reviews or to get next week's Film Reviews and Movie News delivered directly to your device, pop along to stuartpink.com/reviews.
With Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Film reviews and movie news.